effectively assigns my office the responsibility. To avoid any confusion, I am asking that council strike the definition of auditor in the proposal and any subsequent references naming my office as responsible for its implementation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Gary Blackmer, former city auditor, 1405 Southeast Martins, Portland, Oregon, retired now. And I want to start by saying that I've probably spent thousands of hours trying to work on, you know, clean money, public campaign financing, and I strongly support anything we can do to keep money from distorting our elections process. So I don't want to in any way discourage you from going forward with this, but the big concern I have is exactly what Auditor Hulka-Bayero raised, which was that it's a program that exceeds her capacity to do well given all the other workload that she has. Just to give you a quick overview, some of the things that I did that increased the workload, soon after I was elected, I did considerable research and proposed the ombudsman. After more research, proposed having independent police review in the auditor's office. Those added considerably to our responsibilities. Several years after that, Commissioner Sten approached me and expressed his concerns about the increasing campaign spending that was going on, and he and I looked at the trends that were occurring, looked at possible strategies, and put together the clean money proposal. We put considerable effort into writing the rules to try to make it airtight. One of the things that we learned was that it's not going to turn out right the first time, that there are always going to be things that need to be fixed. So your Citizen Commission was very similar to our Public Campaign Finance Commission, intended to look and review and improve. And we did. We found fraud. We sent the person to prison. That was very clearly in the newspaper and put out there. We also changed the rules in terms of what the qualifying amounts were. But still, it left a lingering bad taste, I think, among Portlanders. But also, in putting all this together, I didn't anticipate the large workload that it would put on the office. I mean, and to be quite honest, one person I don't think will be enough, because what happens is you get a huge amount of work during the election year and nothing in the off year. So it's either, you know, flooded with work and then a drought, and trying to staff for that can be very difficult. So I would urge you to think about adequate staffing. It also took a considerable amount of my time, just because it's such a public responsibility, and the auditor's office gets in the middle of campaigns where allegations are made against each other. They need to be reviewed. The timing of complaints was—I've lived through all of this. I can tell you all the concerns that arose that we didn't anticipate.
So, Mr. Blackman, if I could interrupt, and
yes.
I really appreciate you coming in. And mm-hmm. by the way, thank you for doing the voter-owned election system, because otherwise I wouldn't be sitting up here.
Mm-hmm.
If you would be willing to meet with me and my staff to have a more thorough discussion of in hindsight, and then looking forward, because as I've said in the outset, we absolutely agree that the auditor will not be the where the staff will be.
Okay, great.
You.
Yeah, from my perspective, it's a program that is critical to have, but it's also critical to get right. And so I would strongly encourage you to kind of study it and do it well.
Thank you very much.
Can I ask the question? Oh, yes. I guess I'm the chair, president. But I'm just curious. Would either of your opinions change if this were a approved charter amendment by the voters of Portland?
First? No, because it's a capacity issue for me. I couldn't do it justice. I couldn't.
Okay.
And, IPR took a lot more work than I anticipated when we first proposed it, and it's grown since then. And to that degree, I have to defer to the auditor, because the auditor is the only one that really has a good sense of the capacity of the auditor's office to handle more workload.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Did you have additional invited?
I do, yes. So, and I really appreciate everybody being so patient. We wanted to make sure that everybody understands what we're talking about, but we are going to time the people who are coming up now. First of all, Casey Jarma from Unite Oregon, Jesse Beeson from ColorPAC, and Amanda Manares from the communities of color.
And you want to go to time testimony?
Yeah.
3 minutes?
I think Tim has given Carla the times.
Welcome. If you could just give us your name, and you each have how many minutes? Three minutes. There's a timer in front of you.
Okay, great. Well, thank you to Mayor Hills and the commission for having us today. My name is Amanda Manjares. I'm with the Coalition of Communities of Color. I'm the advocacy director, and the coalition is an alliance of 20 culturally specific community-based organizations, including representation from the Latino community, the African-American community, the Native American community, Asian-Pacific Islander community, African, Slavic, and immigrant and refugee communities. And we work to advance racial justice by addressing socioeconomic disparities, institutional racism and inequity in services. And the coalition has been very active in the open and accountable elections campaign because we believe in the spirit of the act. We think it will do great work to amplify community voices and improve our democracy by doing four important things. One is raising voices with the MATCH program. Two, reducing the influence of big money by requiring the caps for those who participate. We think the work to establish the oversight board will make sure the system is accountable and working the way it's supposed to. We also believe it will give community leaders and people of color the opportunity to run for office. I know you have heard a lot of reasons for enacting this. We think that this elections are foundational to our democracy. And so for us, the community has been very involved in this. And we think for our democracy to work, we need two things that are reflected in this act. One, we need people's voices to be heard in the process. And we also need leaders that reflect our communities. I think we've heard data around only two people of color ever being serving on the commission. We think this hits right at a fundamental barrier to running for office, which is fundraising. I think Commissioner Novick hit it right on the head when he talked about requiring a candidate to be wealthy or well-connected in order to be successful is part of the thing. I've worked with candidates before, and a lot of times a candidate is scared off by running for office when you ask them to sit down and make a list of every person they're going to have to call in order to run for office. Some candidates in communities of color also experience cultural barriers to running for office, and so they have issues in asking for money when they have to step too far outside of their communities and would prefer to reach out to their neighbors to do so. So we think this reform is pretty simple in that if you can show enough community support and if you can do the work to reach out to small donors, you can be successful. And we've elected each of you to enact these kinds of solutions. We think this type of measure requires a thoughtful approach, and our communities are calling and ready for it. So with that, we ask you to support the Open and Accountable Elections Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Beeson? Just give us your name.
Sure. Good evening, Jesse Beeson, founding member of ColorPAC. Thank you all for having me here today. ColorPAC is building an organization to regularly recruit, train, elect, and support candidates of color to run for all levels of office here in Oregon. But today I'm here to read the open letter from our diverse group of folks in the coalition. So as a diverse group of advocates that represent tens of thousands of Portlanders, we urge you to build on your work to advance transparent and participatory government in our city and to join us in supporting the open and accountable elections reform. Portlanders are indeed concerned that the current system of how candidates raise money creates barriers for people from our communities to participate in democracy. For instance, in the 2012 elections, 60% of all money raised for city campaigns came from just a few hundred donors who gave over $1,000. Their $1.7 million in donations dwarfed the $570,000 from 6,000 small donors who gave less than $250. This dynamic makes it more difficult for the everyday person to feel engaged in his or her democracy. Our city is stronger when everyone has an equal say and greater opportunity to engage in our democracy, whether by running for office to represent their own communities or bringing their perspectives forward on the policies that impact us all. Though Portland faces a host of challenges, we know that we can meet them together. We want to raise all of our voices to unlock meaningful solutions to our city's biggest challenges. Open and accountable elections creates new pathways to get us there. Our groups are on the front lines every day, advancing the interests of Portland's women, people of color, working families, immigrant communities, small businesses, young people, seniors, LGBTQ individuals, and other underrepresented groups. We believe in a Portland where the people we serve contribute to meaningful solutions to our city's biggest challenges and where they have a truly equal chance to run for office to do so. But there are real barriers to running and participating under our current system. Open and Accountable Elections Portland offers a powerful suite of tools to boost the trust and the pride that Portlanders have in their local government and to offer more Portlanders an avenue to engage in the city that we all love. We hope you will vote in favor of this reform. And our letter is signed by the Coalition of Communities of Color, the Asian Pacific Action Network of Oregon, Common Cause Oregon, League of Women Voters of Portland, Latino Network, Oregon League of Conservation Voters, Rose Community Development, Main Street Alliance of Oregon, SEIU Oregon State Council, Unite Oregon, NAACP Portland Branch, CAUSA Oregon, Communications Workers of America, the Bus Project, Color Pack, that's me, the Urban League of Portland, Bernie PDX, Portland Forward, Thousand Friends of Oregon, Osberg, the Sierra Club, Opal, Associated Students of PSU, Oregon Work and Families Party, Democracy Spring Oregon, Move to Amend PDX, 350 PDX, Western State Center, Represent Portland, and Oregon Walks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chama, just give us your name.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Casey Chama. I'm the Executive Director of the Center for Intercultural Organizing. You have my testimony, so I'm not going to go and read through, but I'm going to make a couple of key points. Unite Oregon, I'm here today on behalf of Unite Oregon and Community Coalition of 30 organizations, as my colleague said. We are supporting on this process because we believe Portland. We believe a Portland that's accountable. We believe a Portland that's inclusive. We believe a Portland that represents all the people that it serves. We run a program, for example, Unite Oregon, that is funded by the City of Portland called Pan-Immigrant Leadership and Organizing Training Pilot. I can attest to you there's many folks that in my that program, they are graduated, who are, I believe, have the capacity to be sitting in that chair that you are sitting today if it's given the opportunity and they have the barriers that they face has been removed. I can tell you, we can do this. I know that there's a lot of questions that has been raised in this process, and it's important to have those discussions and have those questions be answered. But at the end of the day, we're not an island. We're not a unique city. There is other cities across the country who have same issue, who decided that this is important issue for them to implement a fair and accountable election. They did that because they want to make sure that everybody is represented. We are in a crossroads in this country right now when we are polarized and people are fearful of participating. So I think in an opportunity of creating this type of program, what it will ask for us, number one, is that it will show that everyone, Portlanders, regardless of their background, their country of origin, their race, their social status, can actually talk to their average Portlanders, their neighbors, their friends, their colleagues, and be able to raise the funding necessary to be able to run and represent Portland if the Portland gives the opportunity. So for me, the end of the day is that we can, what's the options we have here? We can answer the questions and do the hard work and then create a program that's equitable and serves the city of Portland. Or we can sit back and be talking about and asking questions and creating and stating with the status quo that we are today. I do believe we are better than that. I do believe that Oregon, Portland deserves better. I do believe that you care. I do believe you want to be accountable to the Portland community. I do believe that Portland wants diverse city council members. I do believe Portlanders want accountability. I do believe that Portland does not equate people when you are running for office. If you get money from the way you do right now, it doesn't mean that you're creating it's a corrupt system. But we need to create an opportunity where people like me can be sitting this chair in front table in front of me and see representatives. I have a 6-year-old twins. I wanted them to see people like me or any average person be able to chair and be able to say, these are members of my community. I can be at that table. A child of Portland who are my first background, she need to be sitting, someone like them to be sitting in that chair. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just a couple of final people, Susan Mote from Every Voice and Kristen Eberhard from Sightline Institute.
Welcome. If you could just give us your name, and you each have 3 minutes, and there's a clock in front of you.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm Kristen Eberhard from Sightline Institute. Sightline is a Pacific Northwest regional think tank, and you saw some of our research in the presentation. So why does Portland need open and accountable elections? Well, we all agree our democracy should be of, by, and for the people. But things are out of balance. Wealthy donors have an outside influence on elections, and candidates for public office have to spend an outsized amount of time talking to those wealthy donors. So, and this is true not just in D.C., but here in Portland. So, for example, in 2012, just 600 big donors accounted for nearly 60% of all of the money going to council races. And these few big donors just drowned out the voices of people who could only give $10 or $20. And in this year's mayoral race, we saw that the winning candidate raised almost $500,000 from just 400 wealthy individuals. So these figures aren't just about the money, it's also about how candidates spend their time, who they make it a priority to talk to. So these numbers indicate that candidates for public office are probably spending a lot of their time talking to these wealthy donors, and that leaves them less time to be talking to people in working class neighborhoods, or as Commissioner Novick said, to renters who don't have that much money to give. And this imbalance between these few big donors and everybody else impacts how people feel about their city government. So when candidates aren't coming to their neighborhoods, aren't calling them to ask for money, people start to become disengaged and feel that local politics is an insider game that only certain people can play. So we know from experience that a public match can really change this dynamic. So a public match can restore balance, strengthen the voices of everyday people, and free up candidates to spend more of their time serving regular Portlanders. Mayor Bill de Blasio from New York explains that New York's public match system lets a candidate run a people-powered campaign. So he says you can make small donors the centerpiece of a campaign, and you don't have to rely so much on big money donors. Portland could do the same thing. A public match also allows candidates to spend more time reaching out to more people and to more diverse people. So in New York, candidates in state races where they don't have a match available, they only get contributions from 30% of the neighborhoods, mostly the wealthiest neighborhoods in New York. But in the city council races where they do have a match available, those candidates go to 90% of the neighborhoods, including African American, Latino, and immigrant neighborhoods. And their list of donors includes not just wealthy professionals, but also artists, barbers, cab drivers, carpenters, police officers. All of them are able to participate when there is a match available. A public match also makes it possible for more regular people, including women and people of color, to run for office. So New York Councilmember Jumaane Williams, who defeated an incumbent to win a seat on the New York City Council, said it was the public match that absolutely made it possible for someone like me to run for office. Without those matching funds, winning would have been difficult, if not impossible. So Portland has the opportunity to do the same thing, to empower and engage everyday people in city elections, and especially at this time of change and growth for Portland, it's important to level the playing field and empower a greater diversity of people to participate in shaping the city's future.
Thank you.
Ma'am? Thank you. My name is Susan Mate. I'm representing Every Voice, a national organization dedicated to passing and helping implement small donor-funded election reform. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. It's hard to deny that money in politics creates a problem at the federal level, and even federal elected officials are conceding that point, although nearly all of them say that they personally are not influenced by money in politics. However, I find that many state and local officials say that money in politics isn't a problem at their level of government, and I have yet to meet a state or local official who will admit that money in politics influences any of their decisions. Kirsten Eberhard just reviewed the data that shows that Portland's democracy is out of balance when it comes to key measures of money in politics, so I won't repeat her data. I have something different to share. Because Every Voice did polling in Oregon last November, I can share how Portlanders perceive money in politics in their own backyards. Portland respondents revealed the following. 81% of Portlanders believe that the middle class is struggling because politicians rigged the rules of the economy, including taxes. 81% believe that unless we change the way elections are funded, elected officials will work for large donors. 72% say they support new laws that control the way political campaigns can raise and spend money. And 70% believe that candidates receiving limited public matching funds after agreeing to take no large contributions is an effective way to clean up politics. 32 localities and states have small donor-funded elections programs. These programs increase and diversify participation in democracy so that participation by donors, voters, and elected officials reflects the diversity of the jurisdiction and brings residents back into the center of the democracy. New York City's program, which is a 6-to-1 match on small contributions, is very similar to the Open and Accountable Elections Act, and it gets results. It increased, well, as Kirsten said and also Christina said, it increased the number of neighborhoods that contribute to campaigns from 30% to 90%. It increased the diversity of the donor base. Donations from predominantly Latino neighborhoods went up 13 times, 24 times higher for African-American neighborhoods, and 23 times higher for Asian-American neighborhoods. It enabled candidates without access to networks of wealth to win elected office. The first African-American woman to ever win citywide office in New York, Tish James, credits the program with her ability to win for this very reason, her lack of access to wealth and the fact that she was able to win with the matching funds. It also increased racial and gender diversity in elected office in New York. New York elected its first African-American mayor in the first cycle of its public financing program, and it elected its first African-American woman to citywide office ever, both of whom used the program to win. For the first time, a majority of New York City Council members are from communities of color, just like the population of New York City. Data collected in other places reinforce that small donor-funded elections programs increase and diversify participation. In Arizona, donations from Latino neighborhoods and those in those neighborhoods with the highest poverty levels increased dramatically under their Clean Elections program in closer alignment with state demographics. I see that there is a question about which office should administer the program in Portland. I can tell you what other jurisdictions do. Many are administered by the person who administers elections, however, such as Seattle and New Mexico. Montgomery County, Maryland is using their director of finance to administer the program with a citizens commission to recommend how much money to appropriate annually. Many jurisdictions create new or utilize existing commissions to administer the program, including New York City, Arizona, Maine, and Connecticut. All are 5-member commissions appointed by elected officials. Regardless of who is responsible for administration, it is not unusual for cities to enter into an intergovernmental agreement with counties for implementation functions because counties already perform elections-related functions that overlap with the way you implement a public financing program. There is a wide range of administration options available to Portland, and every voice would be happy to consult with Portland officials on options, as well as connect whichever agency implements with technical assistance and implementers from other jurisdictions so that Portland has access to the best practices that have worked in other jurisdictions. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today, and I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you, Susan. I understand you come from the East Coast to participate today.
Yes, but it's to come home. I'm from Longview, Washington.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being here.
We're good. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
And Commissioner Fisher, if you would like to list your questions quickly so that people who are going to be coming up to testify may be able to address, speak to them. Would you like to do
that? Thank you. I'll do it very quickly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. I had the benefit the other day of sitting down with Tim Crail and walking through some of the open questions because there are some things marked to be determined in the draft we have. So I'm going to just put some questions on the table. The first is, under the hard cap of 0.2% of the general fund, it is possible that there will be more participating candidates than there are available dollars. If that happens, you would go to a rationing system because there wouldn't be enough dollars to fund participating campaigns. How would a rationing system work, and what would be a fair way to do that? Number two, there's an anti-collusion provision in this draft, which I think is very important. But there is also the possibility of collusion informally. And here's how it might work. 4 or 5 people who are single-issue candidates who participate in this system for the purpose of talking about one issue. for the duration of the campaign, hoping to have someone make a runoff. In that instance, you could swamp an incumbent if those people all had a single issue that brought them to the table, even if they didn't collude. Is that fair, and how might we mitigate against that? There's a provision in this current draft which would lift the limits from $250 to $500 in the event a non-participating candidate spent more than the $250,000 in the primary. I'm using the example of a city council candidate. The idea, I guess, is to sort of have an elevator that raises the amount above the existing limits for people to raise if a non-participating candidate goes above the $250,000 limit. So again, using the example of multiple participating candidates, how might that work to the extent there are, say, five participating candidates and one non-participating candidate? Would each of the participating candidates be allowed to take advantage of the increase in contributions? And would that then not work against the whole goal of taking big money out of campaigns? Because you would then have the prospect of participating candidates swamping the ability of a non-participating candidate in that particular race. Next, one of the hallmarks of this, one of the cornerstone values, is about transparency. My understanding is currently ORSTAR is the state system where your contributions are reported, does not identify a donor if the donor makes a contribution of under $100.
Actually, that's not correct, Commissioner, because the police union has listed all the $10 on ORSTAR.
Well, if the candidate doesn't take affirmative action, ORSTAR will just list them as a bundle of people making contributions under $100.
But that's the reporting. We can require.
I'm flagging it just as an issue. Mm-hmm. If transparency is a cornerstone, I think there should be a requirement at some database that all the qualifying contributions are listed. Commissioner Novick and I think, have a disagreement about the threshold amount for these races. Under this proposal, the number is pegged at $250,000 for a primary in a city council race. And I want to just put that in context for a second. I looked at my last three races, and I averaged out how much I spent in my races, because I'm a typical city commissioner. And over my last three races, my average cost of that race was $120,000. Now, let's take me out of the mix and take someone who is not a typical candidate. If you were to take someone who spent more, then the question is, what is the logic of going much above $150,000 for the primary, which, as I recall, was the limit when Commissioner Fritz successfully used voter-owned elections to get elected? The current figure of $250,000 is about twice what I have spent on average in my three campaigns for the primary. I've been successful in all three primaries, and is substantially more than Commissioner Fritz used to be successful when she was successfully elected. So the question is, what is the appropriate amount, and where should it be pegged? It is not an idle concern if there's a hard cap on the amount of money that goes to participating candidates, because at $250,000, there is a, which would per candidate mean 140-something thousand under this proposal, there's a greater likelihood of rationing if lots of people participate and the fund does not have sufficient amounts to cover it. The question of referral is something we're going to debate at some point, and I hope people take the time to say where they stand on whether there should or should not be a referral. The two considerations that I'd like to hear people speak to are, number one, does it make a difference that voter-owned elections was repealed by the voters? And number two, yes, this council appropriates general fund monies for lots of purposes, but this is a unique purpose. This is appropriating general fund monies for our own re-elections. And is that something we can do and take advantage of without an intervening referral to the voters? And finally, on the question of in-kind and of in-kind contributions and independent expenditures, the reason I asked our friend from UFCW 555 that question, and the reason I think we have to grapple with it, is that as the auditor, as both auditors said very eloquently, these things are complicated and there will be glitches, There are glitches in all well-intentioned things. I seem to recall there might have been some glitches with the arts tax in its implementation. So we need to be especially clear about what is allowed and what isn't. And the last thing we want is a system where people spend the entire election cycle filing complaints against each other and having them adjudicated for tactical reasons. So the definitions of things like independent expenditures with clarity about what it covers, the definition of in-kind contributions with clarity is important because those will be guideposts. Those are some of the issues, Commissioner Fritz, that I hope to hear from today and in the future, and I appreciate the opportunity to put them on.
Thank you. And again, we appreciate everybody's patience. We'll go to the sign-in sheet now.
I show 47 people have signed up. The first three, please come on up, are Stephen W. Bartlett, Sophia Rose, and Gary Marshke. And they'll be followed by Ethan Scarl, Chloe Udaly, and Mage Bergio.
So folks, want to ask you to try to be as succinct as possible so we can hear as many people as possible, because I think we're losing a quorum at 6. Is that right?
Why?
Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you.
Who'd like to go first?
I must say that I'm quite surprised. We didn't expect this. But I would also like to say I agree with everything that's been said here today.
Well, give us your name first, though.
Steve Barton.
Thank you, Steve.
And I'm in support.
That's the briefest testimony we've had in a long time. Thank you.
I'm in total support of the concept, and I do appreciate some of the issues that are brought up that in answering those issues can only strengthen and make it more successful.
Thank you. I'm Sophia Bartlett Rose, and I second my husband.
Wow, you two set some kind of new record here today.
Gary, take the full 15 seconds.
Yeah, right. I'll take the full 15 seconds this time. Gary Marshke, recently deposed executive director of the Multnomah County Office of Citizen Involvement. So as I've heard before, we screwed up public funding of elections and campaigns once before, and we may not get a second chance. So we really need to get it right. We need to do it transparently, but we also need to do it now, because it's election time. We've got everyone's attention. This is the time when it's important. So I support all of this. The thing that concerned me the most, and that's why I've got notes all over the margins on my testimony, is that it seems as though there was lots of input that was gotten from lots of different disparate communities going into the structure of this in its inception. What I heard, though, was that the oversight was going to be done by a committee or a commission of experts and community leaders. And frankly, with all due respect to all the community leaders and all the voices in this room here, we need less community leaders and more community voices at the table. And so what I propose is, in addition to this commission, we also have a community review committee that is equitably, inclusively, and transparently recruited, perhaps through the Office of Citizen Involvement, where there's lots of diverse and equitable programs going on. And then armed with all the data, they also, in conjunction with the commission, can be looking at this measure. A plethora of perspectives suddenly drawn from all over the community, working with their city government to bring truly open access to elections to anyone that seeks a voice. Part of the past fraud that we heard about could have actually been prevented in voter-owned elections if people from certain cultures would have been represented at the table and could have shared their perspectives, because some of it was really based on cultural misunderstanding of how government really works in this country. So if we have those voices at the table, we have those people represented, what we have is better solutions and more sustainable solutions. People from communities are experiencing the obstacles and the barriers guiding new approaches that open doors to public participation in elections. People with political and social and personal agendas, leading their passion in conversations, pushing the envelope of progress. And those people with privilege opening doors and stepping aside while the community does its work. So bringing all communities together to develop and administer, along with the experts, viable community-based solutions to one of the fundamentals of our democracy is really what I would call the practice of equity and inclusion. And that's what I'd like to see incorporated into this new proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a great suggestion. And actually, everybody, we're going to continue to having these discussions. So send in your comments to me or to Christina Nieves, and we'll make sure that everything gets moved forward. Thank you.
I second him, too.
Thank you very much.
The next three are Ethan Scarl, Chloe Udaly, and Maj Bergio. And they will be followed by Jason Kafori, Jefferson Smith, and Daniel Lukow.
Good afternoon. Welcome. I think you're first. Go ahead.
Very good. Mayor Hales and commissioners, I appreciate the opportunity. And I'd just like to affirm my support for the excellent testimony that we've been hearing, both from the council and from the floor. My name is Ethan Scarl. I'm a retired physicist and computer scientist. I currently work with the Alliance for Democracy. I will just add a couple of little points. One, we are in the midst of perhaps the most tumultuous and bizarre election season in American history. And the dominant theme coming out of that is citizen cynicism. People don't believe that they have a voice. And I do believe that the situation in Portland is vastly superior to that of the country as a whole in this respect. But nevertheless, there is cynicism in the street. And I would love to be able to turn to the guy on the bus who says, those guys in City Hall, they don't care about us. They just after their own business. And tell them, hey, if you can scrape together $50 every couple of years, there's a multiplier that'll give you enough, that'll make it reasonable to ask for an audience or have your voices be heard. Another aspect of this proposal, which has not been perhaps emphasized enough, is transparency. And that this proposal does not restrict large money, wealthy individuals or corporations from making sizable contributions, but as long as it becomes clear to the voters that that has happened and where that comes from, then we'll be a long way toward remedying the worst effects of that. And so that's much appreciated. So I do have faith in this council. I believe that you are dedicated and will find a way to. I understand that the problems are not trivial, but that you will find a way to implement this and address the problems that the auditor has raised and give us some public financing again. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Chloe Daly. Today is a sad day for Portland's housing justice community, so forgive me if my testimony is a little raw. To be honest, this is about the last place I want to be to talk about how our lack of diverse and true representation is contributing to the inequities and injustices that we are confronted with every day, but here we are. Before I begin, I want to send word from Representative Alyssa Kenny Geyer, who is out canvassing for Measure 97 and wants to express her support for open and accountable elections. So, the fact that in over 100 years, only 7 women and 2 people of color have ever been elected to council should be proof enough that our form of city government deeply entrenches incumbents and favors the politically connected and affluent. And the current state of our city certainly reflects the fact that too many of us do not have real representation. But let's use my candidacy as a case study. Despite my lifelong connection and service to this community, my decades of experience, my significant support, and my over 700 campaign contributors, I have struggled to raise enough money to run a competitive campaign, in part because I've declined to take donations from entities that stand to profit from doing business with City Council for many of the reasons that people have already expressed today. And, you know, most of those entities include the 600 people who typically fund our elections. So I have had challenges. As a person of modest means, a single parent, a small business owner, and a renter, I have more in common with the average Portlander than I do with anyone currently sitting on City Council. That's a problem. That's a problem because when our elected leaders only represent a narrow and privileged segment of our community, the rest of us tend to get left out. If we had a publicly funded option in place today, I would have been done fundraising many weeks ago and could focus on what's more important, building relationships with constituents and gaining a deeper understanding of the issues we're facing as a city. It's not the fault of individual commissioners that they can't understand and address all the needs and challenges of our broader community, but I do believe it's incumbent upon you to recognize and reduce the barriers to participation in our political process and help make way for a wave of new leadership, which must include women, people of color, and members of other marginalized groups in our community. I support Commissioner Fritz's open and accountable elections. I am proof that it doesn't take $500,000 to run a viable campaign for City Council, but I won't deny that it's been incredibly challenging, and I want to ensure that people with less privilege, opportunity, and resources than me can run and win in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Meg Bergio. I'm a member of Portland Forward, and I also live and work in Portland as a case manager for adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. So because of my job, I get to see the daily struggles that so many have in our community for individuals that are living in crisis and those that are struggling to stay safe and to stay housed. You know, political rhetoric and policies are typically far from a priority. It's hard sometimes to find compelling reasons to motivate people living in these situations to get involved in our local political process with so many other things on their plate and on their mind. But I believe that this proposal could truly make a difference in engaging everyday Portlanders, and I'd like to offer an example for how. Right now, I have the privilege to help facilitate a self-advocacy group for about 10 individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. In our group of about 10 people, only one person has a part-time job, and every other member lives off of a Social Security benefits, which is about $733 a month. So as we meet as a group, as we talk about the things that are important to us, about how government affects our lives, about why we should be engaged and involved and interested in our local campaigns and getting elected officials that share our values, asking even a donation of $10 is a huge sacrifice for people. But if we could get as a group and if each of the member of this advocacy group was able to donate $10, and I could say, guess what, that's going to be matched 6-1. Your $10 donation actually turns into $60 donations. If everybody in this group can give $10, all of a sudden this group can give $600 to a candidate for local office. That builds true political equity within that group. We might have elected officials running for office that would want to come and talk to us at our meeting. We might get to share a little bit about what our lives are and what is important to us. So I just would like to say that I think you have the opportunity to show leadership here in passing a policy that really makes a difference in engaging everyday Portlanders, and I hope that you take it. I think that all Portlanders deserve a voice, not just a voice that's proportionate with their income. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Next three are Jason Kafori, Jefferson Smith, and Daniel Lukow. And they will be followed by Carol Cushman, Amira Streeter, and Octaviano Mercerius.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thanks for having us. Money and politics is obviously, oh, sorry, Jason Kafouri. I'm an attorney at Kafouri and McDougall, a law firm. I'm also helping with many people in this room on the local campaign finance reform measure at the county level, which is before the voters, measure 26184, which would have $500 contribution limits and disclosures. And I think let's watch and see what happens. I think that is going to pass. I think you're going to see that it's a left-right issue, campaign finance reform. This, to me, is a great start. I think it still needs some tweaks here and there. I love the idea that going to a coffee shop and meeting with a small number of people would be financially beneficial for candidates. I love that idea. I love the idea of going door to door, knocking, and being able to tell someone, hey, give $5, $10, $20, and it matches. And I think we'll see a lot more people engaged in our political process if we pass this. I do have a couple of concerns. I think that these caps, without some sort of flexibility and some sort of monitoring group, could lead to people not deciding to run because there's too many people already running, the pot's not big enough. You know, Commissioner Fish, I heard your concern. You know, just running this local campaign, it costs tens of thousands of dollars to get up on TV. It costs tens of thousands of dollars to do mailings. You have to have enough money in the system, and you have to be able, if we're really going to get more people to participate, to be able to not have folks feel like their hands are tied because there's not enough money and there's too many folks wanting the money to be able to run. So I think that there has to be some sort of flexibility, and I don't know if it needs to go back to city council to change in the middle of a cycle, but we don't want to have a system where we create this brilliant idea, but it turns out to not work in reality because people can't use the money. This doesn't do anything, obviously, in terms of the independent, you know, dark money as we're seeing now. And so that's, I think, something down the road that we could add to it. Overall, I'm a huge supporter in the idea of more empowering small donors, getting more people involved in our political process. And Oregon ranks 49th in the country, according to the Center for Public Integrity, in political financing of our elections. 49th. We're one ahead of Mississippi. We should be a leader. We should be an innovator nationally. There's going to be public financing across the country in many states. Let's see what happens in this election cycle. But let's start something here in Portland that we're proud of, and let's give it the flexibility to be able to be successful and lead to more candidates. Thanks.
Can I just ask one point? You said that you referenced dark money and said this doesn't address that. Do we locally have any authority to go after the 501c4 abuses?
Well, I think that we can create taglines. That's what we did at the county level, where that way at least the independent expenditures that are coming in, you know where the money's coming from. And we don't have power under Citizens United in stopping it currently, but if you know where the money's come from, I think that that's a start. And, you know, I think that's also an enormously popular thing. They have it in California. They've had it for decades. They have it in Maine, and it's actually going to be on the statewide ballot disclosures of the independent money in Washington this cycle. So let's see what happens.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
For the record, my name is Jefferson Smith, speaking as a resident of Portland. I had the privilege of being the guest facilitator for a group of about 36 community organizations that were discussing how to add greater balance to the political system. They came out with a set of recommendations that reflected very well in this proposal. Rather than going through those again, they're being, I think, really well covered by the good turnout today and by the invited testimony. So instead, what I wanted to do was take a stab at responding to some of Commissioner Novick's, I think, three concerns, and maybe also to the question that Commissioner Saltzman raised. First, I heard the question about who administers. I agree, got to solve it. I might disagree with the auditor that the definition of elections wouldn't cover this. I think it might have something to do with administrative preference, but I don't think she is the only option, whether it's something in the city apparatus, even contracted, or come with strength to the county. Vote this unanimously, and I'm looking at this side of the table as well. Approach Deborah Kafouri and friends with full strength and humility. They administer elections, and greater city-county collaboration would be useful anyhow. Annual limits of the fund. I agree that we want to make sure that this has enough money so it would be worthwhile. A few thoughts, or at least a couple. One, I view it as a base. I don't think that the first $100,000 that you raise would not matter, even if there are a few people competing for that, so you couldn't get your second $100,000. You might by then have generated enough momentum, you might be able to raise the next $100,000. I don't think that eliminates your concern. I do think there is a discussion that should be had now and an iterative process of the commission to think about what that proper cap is, that proper fund size should be. And I think it's worthwhile to consider the amount. And if the amount needs to be increased in the future, that ought to be an option. And then that raises the question of how to pay for it. I start with a basic belief that this is as big a priority as anything else we do. That an expenditure to allow for greater participation in our democracy is as high a value for city investment as a road or a sidewalk, as important as road and sidewalks are. For people in my neighborhoods who die on streets, that matters more than anything else. For people who want to get somewhere quickly, feeling like they have an opportunity to weigh in to where those cities get spent matters as much as anything else. But also, let's imagine practically that this will get a little bit thick, so I apologize in advance, that costs of elections increase in the city as they have been in the state. I think thanks in part to the public financing regime before, they were chilled a little bit, and we saw a little bit of plateau in cost. But if you'll bear with me for a moment, the year that the majority of the city council, 1974, when the majority of the city council was in high school, and I think, Commissioner Novick, I think you were 11, and I think also in high school.
Jefferson, I was in diapers.
Okay, very good, likewise. So cost of a state house race in this state on average was $3,000. I'll be almost done. In 1994, $30,000. This last election, not average but expensive, raised $750,000. If that trajectory increases, the kind of pressure that it will take to raise money from people with business to bear at the city council will be significant. All you'll have to do is avoid one, two, or three deals 10 years from now that would be avoided by having a less corrupt system 10 years from now to pay for this for many years. Thanks for your indulgence.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Hi there. My name is Daniel Lukow, and I am the political director for Common Cause Oregon. Common Cause urges you to pass open and accountable elections proposal by council vote. Common Cause is a nonpartisan grassroots organization dedicated to upholding the core values of American democracy. We work to create open, honest, and accountable government that serves the public interest, promotes equal rights, opportunity, and representation for all, and empower all people to make their voices heard in the political process. Open and accountable elections will help to grow our democracy. Right now, the average citizen is less connected to our democracy than at any other time in our history. People believe that their voices are not being heard by their lawmakers. Even in this toxic and bitter election, one thing that unites people of all parties is the feeling that a voice matters less in the process than those of big donors. And this has led to a collapse in trust in our government and an increase in feeling disengaged, disillusioned, and disenchanted. Open, accountable elections is a smart path forward. When we limit big money and match small contributions, candidates have an incentive to campaign every neighborhood and among every community. That gives everyone the ability to engage in the conversation. As we've seen in other communities where similar reforms are enacted, this increases participation, it broadens the discussion, and ultimately supports a more robust and representative government. And this is how we rebuild confidence in our democracy, because democracy only works when everyone owns a piece of it together. Our country has a long history of growing our democracy. First we gave men the right to vote, then men without property, then women, then people of color. Then we let people vote by mail, then we let them register in a simple manner. Open and accountable elections is the next logical step in bringing people in and making sure that they have a seat at our table. Thousands of Portlanders have come together to call for open and accountable elections. Please work together to pass this reform by council vote and to take the next step in growing our democracy. Thank you.
Thank you. Reiterating a question or a request that came earlier, and that is, by happenstance, the three of you ended up here together, or at least it might have signed up together, but at any rate, you all three sound like you might be qualified to be tuning mechanics in terms of making the proposal work better and answering some of the questions that we've heard here. So as Commissioner Fritz said, could you keep it coming, please, and the interim between this hearing and when we work on this next, because some of these questions about where it's administered and how the caps work, those details will matter, and your ability to bear down on those details and help us get them right would be much appreciated.
Let's get through Tuesday.
Yeah, that's right.
And Mr. Mayor,
everything's a detail compared to Tuesday.
And Mr. Mayor, if I might respond related to that, sort of the iterative nature of this policymaking, and this is at least for Commissioner Novick, and I think would be for Commissioners Saltzman and Fish, is that one of the reasons I think Daniel's testimony is so apropos is that we should pass this in a way that makes it clear that it is expected to make improvements and adjustments, not that it's just a yes or no vote at the ballot that people here should hold sacrosanct and never change, but that it is thought that we will change it, and that's, I think, another reason to do it here. Not only because it'd be tough for the people in these rooms to raise $250,000 to $1 million to try to get it on the ballot and pass it, but also because they're trying to get access to the system, and money is the barrier, so let's not erect that barrier to even getting this done, but also that it should be iterative, where there should be a chance to make it clear to people that we anticipate to make it better over time.
Yeah, that's great.
And we found with the arts tax that because it was sent to the voters, a lot of people are saying, well, it has to be exactly what it was sent to the voters, even though there's some things in it which should be fixed.
Agreed, Commissioner. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
The next three are Carol Cushman, Amira Streeter, and Octaviano Mercerius, and they will be followed by Charlie Fisher, Jesse O'Brien, and Emma Easley Darden.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Who would like to be first? I don't remember the order. So.
Go ahead. Okay. I've got all kinds of time. I'm Carol Cushman, and I'm representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. As an organization that promotes active and informed participation in government, we have made money in politics reform a priority issue since 1973. At the local, state, and national level, leagues throughout the country are working towards our goal of a more inclusive political process with broad-based open elections. We urge you to move Portland one step closer to getting greater participation in elections by directly enacting open and accountable elections reform. This reform would reduce the influence of big donors by matching small donations from ordinary Portlanders, making it easier for all to have their voices heard, and allowing candidates without access to networks of wealth to run for office and win. In Portland, we don't shy away from breaking with the status quo when the status quo isn't working. We don't have to wait for Washington, D.C., to act. You have the opportunity to reduce the power of money and increase participation in city elections right now. This approach to reform has proven to work in places such as New York City because their small donor matching system, candidates are campaigning in 90% of neighborhoods instead of just the wealthiest areas. Here in Portland, we can replicate this success and ensure more people have a say in our elections by encouraging candidates to campaign and seek donations among voters in all parts of the city. These donors will have a stake in the success of their preferred candidate and likely will be inspired to increase their involvement in city politics and policy development. Participation. This reform will enhance political equality, ensure maximum participation in the political process, protect representative democracy from the distortion of big spending in election campaigns, ensure transparency and the public's right to know who is using money to influence elections, and enable candidates to compete equitably for office. The League urges your support for this reform. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Yes. Hi, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. Thank you for having me today. My name is Amira Streeter, and I am the Policy and Advocacy Director for the Urban League of Portland. The Urban League is a community-based organization founded in 1945 to empower African Americans and other Oregonians to achieve equality in education, employment, and economic security. The Urban League supports this measure and elections reform. Our democracy is stronger when we increase participation, and this measure would allow more equitable representation in the most important form of government that we have in the state. It would raise the voices of the people. It would reduce the influence of big money and increase the ability and accessibility for people of color to run for office. This meaningful election reform will foster greater diversity, both for those who run for office and for the policies that are taken up by our government. The method being proposed today has a proven track record of success to break down barriers that prevent people from having a voice in our democracy by making impactful contributions.